Very happy to have today as guests Tammy Rogers and Tom Utes. They released an album together, the title of which is Surely We'll Be Singing. We're going to start this portion of the program off with the first single release, which is I Surely Will Be Singing. Then we're going to talk to Tammy Rogers and Tom Utes. You're going to learn a lot. You're going to enjoy this wonderful album, wonderful artists, and so happy to be able to bring you this kind of special edition of Unreal Bluegrass. To the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard a very popular single, I Surely Will Be Singing, which is off of the album Surely Will Be Singing by my guest today. I'm so happy to have Tammy Rogers and Tom Utes. How are both of you guys doing?
Doing excellent. How are you, Steve?
Doing good, doing good. Tammy, you're connected in here. We can hear you just fine.
I am. Yeah. Hey, everybody.
This is the first time for Tammy. As I mentioned off the air, her name has been invoked many times, all in a good way, either through Tom Utes or other performers, and certainly through Richard Bailey. The audience might know of Tammy more immediately from the fabulous band. I think they're great. The Steel Drivers, a lot of people do. But Tammy's the fiddle player, harmony singer, plays all kinds of great music with them. And I think at least one of the hearts and or souls, if there's more than one of the Steel Drivers, I think you look no further than Tammy Rogers. I think the sound doesn't exist without you. Not that everybody else isn't great, but I listen for Tammy playing and singing and being part of that band. And I think, just real happy to have you. Tom?
Well, very kind.
Tom Utes, you've been a guest on here many times. You kind of know my way of doing this. We just played that first cut on this great new album. There's 12 cuts on it, and the name of the album is Surely We'll Be Singing. It's on Mountain Fever. And I know the audience has heard I Surely Will Be Singing quite a bit. I didn't know until in preparation, by the way, that there's a little bit of an inspiration from Jesse Norman.
And by the way, Steve, I totally agree with you. I think there's a lot of things that make the Steel Driver special, but it's the vocal blend with Tammy singing the tenor that really nails it. So I just wanted to insert that. And,
good,
of course, her fiddle playing, too. But, there is a Jesse Norman connection. I heard an interview with Jesse Norman at PR right after she passed away. They re-aired one of the Fresh Air interviews with Terry Gross and Jesse Norman. And Jesse said that Jesse was an incredibly great African-American soprano singer, and in the face of great adversity developed her wonderful art and craft. And she said in that interview, as long as I have breath, I will be singing. And Tammy and I wrote the next day, we're writing the next day, and I told Tammy about this, and she was like, well, hey, let's write that. Tammy rephrased it a little bit to I Surely Will Be Singing. And what's so interesting to me is, you know, that works so well as a bluegrass song, but the inspiration of it comes from an African-American classical singer, which just goes to show that there really is no other.
Goes back and forth, flows back and forth. I'll tell you, Jesse Norman, this goes back a long time. First introduced to me, since the name has come up, was a PBS show that she did. It was also released as an album with Kathleen Battle, where it was all spirituals. The whole thing was them and both of them together. You know, so you had this enormous voice of Jesse Norman and this tiny bell-like voice of Kathleen Battle doing spirituals, and it was just a gorgeous thing. And I would recommend to the listener, if you want to say, you're going to learn a lot from this show with Tom and Tammy on it, but if you want to say, who's Jesse Norman, and take a note, if you want to be absolutely paralyzed listening to an opera singer, Jesse's version of Strauss' Four Last Songs, I think, is the most overwhelming thing. Once you start playing it, you almost have to listen to the whole thing, and then you can really get just an incredible ability that she had. So for anybody listening, if you want to listen to Jesse Norman, I'd say Four Last Songs from Strauss. Give that a shot.
Awesome.
There, that's too much.
Go
ahead, Tim. Do what you're going to do it after this? Okay.
I'm going to go listen to that after this. That sounds very inspiring.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. She, you know, I don't think Strauss, well, he didn't write it for her. There's other recordings, but I think had he been around, you know, he would have written it for that type of powerful voice. It's just unbelievable. But anyway, we're here talking to Tammy Rogers and Tom Utes about a lot of great music. And that first song, I love that inspiration, Tom. And that's one of the things, Tammy, you must recognize, and I think that the listeners do from Tom, that he pulls all these other references from books. We talk about books that he's, that, and you do too, But I'm always fascinated by Tom will come in with some reference that, and I take notes, usually talking to Tom, I take notes and go back and find out what was he talking about. It's going to happen after this show as well because of so many different things that are pulled in. But that's just kind of the way his mind works. Go ahead, Tammy. I want you to talk about that because you get to write this stuff with him.
I do. You know, and that, you know, I think one of the big reasons that we have written so much, you know, together in the last 4 or 5 years is we're very similar in that regard. You know, I love to read as well, and interested in a lot of different types of things in history and, you know, styles of music outside of bluegrass. So it's great when just in conversation, you know, we usually start out a writing appointment. It's like, hey, you know, hey, Ben, what's been going on? And just in conversation, you know, to feel open for him to share that. Oh, yeah, I was listening to NPR, and this interview came up. Like, wow, that's great, you know. So we're both very open in that way. And it's great, you know, because I think as songwriters, you know, your inspiration can come from anywhere. And that's very exciting to me, you know. And creativity is all around us. It's just, you know, keeping your eyes and ears open to it.
That's what I think is so amazing about what you're talking about, Tammy. And I know you have that because I can hear it in the songs that you write notes about. And I know from your music in the past, and Tom, I know from you've been a guest many times, all those little bits that you pick up and then make them into not a story necessarily about that bit, but it gets incorporated. Well, like, okay, I spent too much time talking about Jesse Norman, but that one bit of an interview wound up being pulled into this great title song because you're all both open to those types of influences. I just think that's fantastic. That's what I love about this music so much.
Well, and, you know, I always feel like if a line or a phrase like that resonates with me, and that, I mean, he told me about that interview, and I said, yeah, you know, I know that I am going to be playing music, even if it's out on my front porch, you know, for the rest of my life, whether I get paid to do it or not. I mean, that sentiment resonates so strongly with me that was the connection for me. That was the spark. And I think any time that you can, you know, as writers, no, we don't write completely, you know, biographical or autobiographical music, but, you know, there's almost always a line or something that I can go, I can relate to that, or I know how that feels, or that happened to somebody in my family, or... Experiencing that with my daughter, you know, those types of things are what makes it real to me.
Well, Tammy and Tom, I'm not meaning to exclude Tom, but I've talked to Tom a lot, and I love it, but I've never had a chance to talk to Tammy, so Tom's going to have to jump in when he wants to.
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
He's there.
I agree with what Tammy says. You know, I think it's a mistake to assume that everything you write has to be autobiographical. The only thing that really matters is whether the emotions that you're describing, whether you do that accurately or not. You know, there's a great song by Guy Clark called The Randall Knife about a knife that his dad had and that he inherited. And it wouldn't matter if that's autobiographical or not. It happens to be autobiographical, but even if it weren't, it would be the same great song. And it's because it's written, it describes the emotion behind the whole thing accurately, and that's something that I try to keep in mind. You know, I'm always going to be in my songs one way or the other, but it doesn't have to be about me. As a matter of fact, I'm more interested in other people's minds because I live in my own mind. I have been living in my own mind for almost 53 years, and I'd rather know what's going on in somebody else's mind than in my own.
Tammy, you both, I'm going to cut to the very last cut. And Tom knows that I don't go in progression necessarily in order, and I don't cover all the songs, but I do want to skip down to the last cut on the album, which is The Door, which I think is kind of, it's a different perspective for me on what's going on. And I want either one of you or both of you to talk about The Door, because I think we've all experienced it after you describe it, we'll all recognize what went on and what The Door represents. By the way, I don't mind dogs barking. I'm happy with it.
sorry. That's my awesome dog.
That's okay. That's okay. That just means this is real.
Yes, it is. It's very real. He's barking at neighbors walking by.
Sure. The Door. Tell me about The Door, because I think that's just a really moving tune.
Oh, thank you. You know, that, in this case, came from a very real experience. The song, you know, I wouldn't say every line of the song is autobiographical at all.
No.
But the experience, I lost my mom almost 4.5 years ago, and the last, you know, year and a half of her life, she had a pretty quick decline due to dementia. And it just seems to be almost, you know, an epidemic these days of family members suffering from either Alzheimer's or dementia.
You know,
and
you know, you make mention of it. Let me ask you this. Do you think it's because we're all so inside of that world that we see it? And of course, you would know with your mother, but do you think it's also just a general malaise that's going around that, you know, people are kind of trapped for 2 years? And that's a too big of a question to deal with. But I sometimes wonder about that effect on all of us of kind of being trapped. We aren't necessarily always trapped, but we are sort of enclosed.
Oh, yeah. I think that, you know, the mental health issues that people have been dealing with, you know, the last couple of years, I think we're going to feel that for a long, long, long time.
I think so.
You know?
I interrupted
really
you. Tell me about The Door.
Oh, that's okay.
It's a beautiful song.
No, The Door. So yeah, that song came about not too long after my mother had passed. And specifically, I read a comment on a friend's Facebook page that had lost their parent. And it was really more that storyline of, you know, the caregiver saying, you know, they were just looking for the door, and that phrase caught my attention, and that description, and so, you know, I brought in the idea to Tom, and you know, he was very sensitive to that idea, and you know, it just came together really, really beautifully.
It's kind of a great comforting. It's so difficult to go through that if you have anybody in your family that's either has dementia or some element of Alzheimer's, that point mm-hmm. where you know this person and they no longer are really sure. I think there's something that's just calming about the fact that they're looking for the door. I love that. That's why I skipped down to that song right after we chatted up. So I just think it's a beautiful concept, and it gives you a little bit of ease and comfort, I think. Doesn't make it easier as you get there, but I like that concept so much.
Yeah, I think that to me the song is almost like it's meant to be a comfort, that whole thought of, you know, just kind of, and one of the verses, you know, describes the son sitting there in the room, you know, kind of having said everything, and it was just the being there, and the very, to me, it's a very comforting thought.
It is. I appreciate what you've done. I've seen that in my family as well. There are several songs. By the way, if you're just tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass, I'm so happy to talk to Tammy Rogers and Tom Utes about their most recent album, Surely We'll Be Singing, which is on Mountain Fever. We've been talking about some of the songs and some of the how this came together just a little bit. But there are several songs on here that just kind of have, and it could be mostly Tammy's fiddle, Tom. I'm not sure, but there are songs on here that the words fit into some kind of mountain feeling, but I also know that it's Tammy's feeling, that Tammy's fiddle that immediately, if I look at Five Winters More and A Winter's Tear and even Mountain Angel, I have scribbled on the side of their mountain, and I think it has to do maybe with the fiddle playing the song itself, but I get a great mountain feel from that.
Well, you know, I mean, Tammy is fall, and I'm very, very interested in Appalachian history and literature, and so a lot of those characters come from my perspective, come from books that I've read or from images that I've seen. A lot of those, especially Mountain Angel, comes from a John Ely book, from a character in a book like that, and it's just you just envision those characters and think about what they might have done and how they might, what their internal dialogues might have been. And then, of course, Tammy can totally nails that mountain feel.
Yeah,
you know, we're both big fans of early pre bluegrass country music too, and we try to incorporate that on that record. That's why there's about half of the songs with the band and half of them are just Tammy and I playing.
Yeah,
as a duo, and that makes it sound more mountainy, I think.
Maybe that's it. You think that's it, Tammy? Your fiddle is so right there in the mountain feel on so many of these tunes. It's just a wonderful feeling. It immediately identifies what the song, what the music is about to me. I don't know.
Thank you. I do feel, you know, again, it's just I can't necessarily explain it other than it's just you know, it's like it's in my bones, it's in my DNA, and you know, those modal types of melodies that we tend to write and fit so well with those types of songs and with the fiddle. So, I can't explain it other than it's kind of what comes out of me.
It's right there. That's kind of what. Well, that's what I would like for you to answer, to say that that's just what you feel. So I'm either you said that to please me because you thought that's where I was going, or that's where we both connected on that. Tom,
no.
on Speakeasy Blues, which is the seventh cut, Tom, that is one of your book-inspired tunes that you both of you perform. The book, I think, is what the Holy Ghost Speakeasy Revival. Speakeasies are just a fascinating topic to me, and I'm glad that you have kind of put a song around that.
Yeah, it's a really cool book by a Western North Carolina writer called Terry Roberts, and the book is called The Holy Ghost Speakeasy and Revival, and it's about... I came across it by coincidence. I was in Asheville and went to my favorite bookstore there called Mellow Props, and it was a staff recommendation, and I just bought it. I had no idea what it was going to be about, and it just turned my reading life around a little bit because I fell totally in love with Terry Roberts' writing and actually befriended him through email, and we had a really good connection, and Tammy and I asked him to write the liner notes for the record, which he did,
yeah.
And we're really pleased about that. And it's, you know, the book is about this preacher who has a train, and he gathers all kinds of misfits from the area, and he just goes through the Carolinas, and he's preaching, but he's also selling bootleg whiskey on the side. And it's a really interesting, wonderful book, and all of his books are set in Western North Carolina. His newest one is set on Ellis Island, actually, that's the exception. But they're all playing between the end of the Civil War and the 1920s, and that, to me, is such a fascinating time. It was like the 20th century had begun in terms of the number of years, but we were still kind of stuck in the 19th century. But on the other hand, the 20th century was dragging the the 19th century into the 20th century. It's such a weird, incredibly important time in literature, in art, in technological progress, in cinema, in music. Yeah. It's just unbelievable.
There will always be a song in any Tom Utes album that's about Civil War and or trains or both.
Oh, absolutely.
There's always going to be one of those. It's just some of your songs about the Civil War are just, well, I'm going to say to exclusion of others, but some of them, I think, this is just remarkable retelling of this horrible time. And I think the way you describe it, exactly right, pulling it forward. We're still pulling a lot of that forward. That's one of my favorite tunes on the album. But I want to talk, you have a new single out. Is that Long Gone?
Yeah.
Okay. Why don't you guys do an intro to Long Gone? I'll drop that in, and then I'll come back and talk to you some more, and then we can let you go.
Tammy, you want to talk about it?
Oh, just talk about it another
time.
And here's Long Gone.
No, I want you to breathe a little life into it, and then we'll go to that one. Anybody can do that.
Yeah. This is the
most upbeat tune. This is the fastest tempo I hear on the album. I have a lot of arrows drawn on that one. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Tom had the idea for this one again. You know, you're right. He loves to write those train songs. The first song we ever wrote together was a train song, as a matter of fact. So I know he's got in the back of his mind someday to do a whole record about trains. So I don't know if this is going to be part of that idea or not, but
what do you think?
you know, we kind of got together, and I think it was, you know, sometimes I'll chime in and say, hey, this one, that would be cool to make that, you know, kind of more of a driving Stanley Brothers kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the train sound, so.
It's just that the train is such a romantic image, you know, and traveling by train in Europe is such a comfortable way and such an elegant way of traveling. And it used to be like that here, too. We just did away with that since we have the interstate. But and so much of the trains, especially the Pullmans, is connected to the civil rights movement and to the African-American middle class and all that.
Yeah,
so
right.
it's just a fascinating image. And I don't know, I can't get enough of it. I love to look at images of trains. I love to look at watches that engineers had and the whole history of Hamilton watches and all that kind of stuff, railroad-approved watches, and how important that was to avoid a collision and all that stuff that we don't think about anymore when we look at our iPhone.
You're right. I think we're going to – I'll drop in now, long gone, for the audience to listen to. And if you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Tammy Rogers and Tom Utes about their new album, Surely We'll Be Singing. You just heard a pretty good description of what you're going to hear, Long Gone. It's, I think, the most up-tempo tune on the album. We'll play Long Gone. I'm going to come back and talk to you for just a little bit more. That was it. That was Long Gone. That was you heard a nice explanation from Tammy and Tom both. Tammy, I wanted to back up to the second cut, On Your Own. This again, I skipped down to the door, and we talked about a very personal event in your life. And On Your Own, I think, is written from the perspective that any of us that have ever had a child can kind of relate to this dilemma. Like, what do you do? This happens to be about your daughter, sort of. But it's a beautiful song. I have a big heart drawn by that because I love it.
Thank you. That was the original. My daughter's 20 now, and, you know, sometimes those transitional years between, you know, teenager and young adult, you know, there's a lot of growth there, both for them and for us as parents. And I think we may have been in kind of a prickly situation there and feeling like she was really, you know, maybe pushing the bounds a little bit, which I think is kind of where that first verse maybe inspiration came from.
Right.
The interesting thing, and I, you know, I've gotten to where I announced the song when we play it live this way, after the fact, you know, we wrote the song and you know, living with it for a little while, I realized, you know, in many ways, I think it was way more autobiographical than it was about my daughter, so.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Well, you know, that's kind of how it generationally goes. I mean, we all recognize it. We all did it. We just don't know it while we're doing it until after we get a little bit further down the road and look back and think, I kind of remember those times.
Yep.
Hey, listen, I want to skip down to The Tree of Life. I think this is and I want you both to talk about this song. I read the notes about it, and I've listened to it a lot. The Tree of Life is the 11th cut. Also, there might be an inspiration from some writing on that one, Tom, but I want you to, the 11th cut on this 12th cut album is The Tree of Life. I think it's a fascinating concept. And Tom, knowing how your brain works, there's a lot more to it than what someone might think automatically.
Well, you know, this is one of those songs that's really musically inspired by the Carter Family, which Tammy and I are both huge fans of. And Tammy's grandmother told Tammy about having seen the Carter Family play in schoolhouses in East Tennessee and stuff like that. So that's one of the fascinating things about American musical history, that they're close behind us. Everything is still warm. We can still feel it vibrate. And I think The Tree of Life is a beautiful sounding set of words. And I've long been a fan of Joseph Campbell's writing, the authority on mythology. And actually the Star Wars trilogy is built on his concept of the hero's journey. And so I was reading one of his books, and he was talking about the symbol of the cross as this tree of life that sin entered the world through, if you're looking at the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
And in the New Testament, sin left the world through crucifixion. But he also talks about the cross as a symbol that symbolizes our way in life from youth to old age. And then the vertical aspect of the cross also symbolizes our ascent from the earth to heaven or whatever realm we want to believe in, but it also symbolizes the in-breath and the out-breath. So it gets pretty esoteric, but the beautiful thing about writing songs is you can write something in really simple, old-sounding language and have some and actually put some meaning in it that is maybe more, not complicated, but more multi-layered than it sounds.
I think it's this, Tom. It's accessible for the people who want to hear what they want to hear into it, and also if people want to listen deeper. I'm not saying there's a division between good and bad, between, you know, hearing what you want to hear versus going into it more deeply, but all of it's there. It's right there if you want to recognize the symbology involved, and it's also you can go into it and just explore as much as you want.
Yeah, I think with any song that I'm drawn to, there's a surface meaning. That's what you listen to when you just listen to the song, and then there's a subsurface meaning, or what's written between the lines, and hopefully that's there.
I hope so. Well, it is, and that's one of the things I like about Tom's music, is just that. I know there's always some depth there, but I also know that you make your music, the melodies and the words, I think, are always, you know, easy to grab a hold of. Let's talk about, speaking of grabbing a hold of, let's talk about Last Night for just a minute.
Yeah.
that was a kind of sneaky segue, but about Last Night.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, you know, that's one of those tunes that, you know, we wrote it, and it was, again, obviously not biographical. I'm very happily married to a fellow named Jeff King, fabulous guitarist here in Nashville, and Tom, of course, is longtime married to his lovely wife, Eva. But I think I may have had that title, and
you did.
Kind of in our conversation, you know, getting started writing, you know, the idea of it as a conversation came up, and I think that was kind of what intrigued us about the song. You know, I mean, sometimes we're intrigued by an idea behind a song.
Yeah.
I mean, that one, you know, lyrically is pretty simple.
Yeah,
honestly.
Yeah, but it's
but
pretty.
The idea of it being a conversation between two people, you know, sounded interesting.
And we also really, really want to get this cut by Reba McEntire and Ronnie Dunn. So whatever you can do to help with that, Steve, please go ahead and do that.
I will. I'll do it. You know I'll do it.
I mean, we wrote it. We were thinking, you know, when we were writing, it's like, this is kind of a classic country song, if you will. You know, it wasn't meant to be quote unquote bluegrass or old time. It just happened to work, you know, on this record. But it's always fun to write something like that too.
Yeah.
Well, and it's about taking a step too far, whether that's in the sense of infidelity, as in this song, or I mean, any adult has done something where you go like, oh God, that was so stupid, and now I have to deal with this for the rest of my life.
Right.
So that's kind of what this song. I mean, as a lawyer, you probably know a lot about that.
Oh, yes, I do. Yes, I do. But I think it's a pretty song, and I think you've all explained it really, really well. Here's something. I always want to go back. Tell me who's some of the musicians that you have. I know both of you are highly skilled musicians because I know you well. Justin Moses, as far as I know, I haven't heard him play a piano. I bet he could, but he plays everything. And Justin's on this.
He could.
I'm sure he could. Sarah Hall told me once that if he spent as much time playing mandolin as he does other things, he'd be better than her. Now, that's a lot. That's saying a lot.
Yeah, he's amazing. I mean, he's an incredible banjo player. He's the 3-time dobro player.
Yeah.
He's a great guitar player. He's an incredible tenor singer. One of my favorite tenor singers in the world. When he was with Blue Highway, he sang tenor to Shawn Lane, and it was like the angels were singing.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's a great fiddle player. He's a good bass player, too. And it's just, his musicality is so understated. You know, he never tries to sidestage anybody. It's so,
never.
His instincts are so refined.
He is always off stage. I'll tell you this story, and I want you to tell me more about the rest of the musicians. I don't want to just get hung up on Justin, but when the My Bluegrass Heart tour came close enough to me, I went to see that with Bela Fleck and all those great people. Michael Cleveland, though, Justin was there, and he played Dobro. Then he walked over to the other side, and he played fiddle with Michael Cleveland. Then he came back over and played bass, and then he played banjo. Tony Triska's part on the banjo with Bela, and he just was always, just always kind of like not looking out, just always downstage is the only term I can think of it. But it's like when you're sitting there watching, you realize what he's doing, you think, well, this isn't normal. Tell me about some other people on the album. Who else plays on this?
Mark Fain played all the bass, and he's a longtime friend of both of ours, and just wonderful guy and player, and just, again, he makes it seem so easy, beautiful tone, and always the perfect part. I don't know that I've ever heard him maybe make one fix. I mean, he's just so stunningly flawless all the time, so he's great.
And he's from Rogersville, which is where Tammy's from.
Yeah, my hometown.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then we have Lynn Williams play drums and two songs. It's not really drums, it just plays a snare drum. He's a wonderful drummer. He's also a neighbor. He just lives a couple minutes from here. And Brent Truitt, who's the mandolin player in this unknown band called the Steel Drivers, he mixed the whole record. So that was great, too, to have him, to get his expertise on that.
How long did it take you to pull all this together? And granted that we've had downtime to kind of write songs, but how long does it take to pull something like this together under the circumstances that we're living in?
If you'd count the hours, not that long. You know, I mean, it was a lot of back and forth because of the COVID thing, but it under normal circumstances, this would not take long. This would not take more than 3 or 4 days to do.
Once you have the songs written,
right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Had an incredible stockpile of songs to choose from, and really, honestly, we just started out, you know, kind of. You know, we call them demos in Nashville, but, you know, making recordings of our songs. And the whole idea was, well, let's just do this and, you know, kind of see what settles. And at the end, I think, what did we have, 16, 17 tracks to choose from, Tom? I don't know. We had a whole bunch. And then it was just the process of going, okay, well, these feel like they work well together. You know, we're... not to preemptively hype, but we're already talking about doing another one. We've got just a whole backlog of songs that would love to see the light of day. So we'll probably get something together later this year, maybe early next year.
Well, that'll be just fine.
Yeah. You know, it's just that we're living in an age that's, ironically, it's very much like it was in the 40s and 50s where, you know, Loretta Lynn might have recorded something, in her case, more 60s, but she may have recorded something in the morning, and the next day she was in the car with her husband and they were going to the radio station promoting the record. And we're in a digital roundabout way coming back to that, where it's so easy for us to record at a high level because we both have studios in our homes,
right.
And stuff can be, you know, you can literally finish something today and tomorrow it's everywhere. It's on the radio, it can be on Spotify, and so in a funny way we're circling back.
That's a great point. I never thought about that. That's a great point. If people know how to take advantage of artists and how to take advantage of that, that's a great point. I've never had anyone tell me that before. That's a great point.
Well, it's true though. You know, we did, I don't know whether you got a copy of the little Christmas songs that we did.
I did.
Idea, and literally we wrote those and what the next week recorded them, and they were ready, I mean, within days. So that's pretty cool.
That's very cool.
You don't have to wait 6 months or a year to get something out anymore. Things can be pretty immediate.
And speaking of immediacy, it's also, Steve, I think a really important thing to think about sometimes in music is like all, especially as it relates to roots music, all the early country music and all the early bluegrass music that we all are so inspired by, that was all stuff that it may have marinated for a long time with people, but when it was made, it was a spur of the moment thing. It was a snapshot in time. There was no overthinking, and it wasn't possible to do many fixes or whatever.
Right.
And so we're so influenced, we all say we're influenced by it, and then we often make the mistake to think about stuff too much and not trust our instincts. And I think this record is more of a is an effort to get back to that, where we're not weighing every note on a golden scale and thinking about tuning here and there. There's imperfections on it, but that's what makes the music alive.
I think so. I think it puts the audience there because what you're talking about. I'm talking to Tom Utes and Tammy Rogers. I want to get to this next song and then let you guys go. But used to be, if you were a band, if you were the Osborne Brothers, and you booked studio time, you better be ready when you go in there because it costs a lot of money, and you didn't make any mistakes because you'd been touring with that album in mind to go in and nail it and be done and get it pressed, and then the delay in getting it out. But now you, I don't think you're playing music with the idea that it's going to be fixed post production. You're trying to make it perfect every time. But I think it's neat. These are observations I've not heard throughout this COVID time that. It's a nice way to kind of take advantage of those opportunities. I like that. That's pretty cool. Thanks. Will Tom and Tammy be appearing together? Will you have dates together? Have you gotten that far down the road?
We've got a few things coming up. We just played here in Nashville at the Bluebird Cafe, and that was really fun.
Oh, yeah.
We are going to go up and do Song of the Mountains there in Marion, Virginia.
Oh, yeah. Great.
And then we're going to tape Mountain Stage later on in February. So I'm not exactly sure when that will air. Wood Songs in Lexington. You know, trying to hit a lot of the radio-type shows. We get a lot of mileage out of that, and that's kind of a target audience.
Sure.
But we're also going to stop in Johnson City. We both love Johnson City. That's where I still have a ton of relatives in East Tennessee, and we're going to do a show with Mike Compton there at the Down Home, so that's going to be a full-out evening, so that'll be fun.
And I think Long Gone, is that the single that's being released now? Is that what you mentioned to me?
It sure is.
Okay,
yeah.
So we've played that for the listeners. I want to make sure we know where to get this. I know where to get it, but tell people where they can find this album, the album I surely will be singing.
Yeah, I mean, people can get it directly from Mountain Fever Records. They can get it from my website, tomjutz.com, TOMMJUTZ.com. There's a web store. Tammy's working on a web store on her website right now, and then it's on Amazon and Spotify, and it's on all the services.
So lots of places. Then
lots
of places. That's good. I think this absolutely most beautiful tune on the album. I'm saving for last. It's the 10th cut on the album, There Ain't Enough Time. And I'm telling you, you explain it. I can't. I just talked about him a little bit, but in his beautiful dobro backup. But tell me about There Ain't Enough Time, and then I'm going to play that, and I'll let you guys go as we do that.
It may be my favorite song on the record as well. It's just, there's something about it. It's a very simple song, but the vibe of it, the production of it, the story that it tells, it just really, really rings true for me. So I love it. And for me, it really takes me back to, not to name check, but the J.D. Crow and the New South 75 album.
Oh, yeah.
That was where my heart and soul was at when we were writing the song and also recording and producing the song. It really felt like that was my inspiration.
And Tom, your voices blend so beautifully throughout. Go ahead, I didn't mean to cut you off.
It's one of those it's a song that we sing as a duet all the way through, and it feels really good to discover our voices as a new instrument, kind of, singing together. And,
yeah, that's a good point.
And it's an interesting song because it doesn't have there's no linear story to the song. It's an emotion, and it just stays there with that one emotion of not having enough time to ever get over certain things in life.
Yeah.
Strange as that may sound.
It's a gorgeous, the vocals are gorgeous. I have written here gorgeous fiddle. And then I have a note about Justin Moses. So it just blows my mind when I hear it. So we're going to play that one. There you heard sort of an introduction or at least an explanation of the tune we're going to play next, There Ain't Enough Time. And you heard it from Tom Utes and Tammy Rogers. I'm so happy that both of you were available to talk about this new album. And I look forward to seeing you somewhere down the road. I'll see you I won't see you personally at Woodsongs unless I just get motivated. Michael Jonathan's a good friend of mine. He's about an hour away. I should probably write down to make it so that I have to go.
That would be awesome.
That would be great. All right, let's do this. I'll say goodbye to Tom and Tammy and Tom, and then we'll play this There Ain't Enough Time from this brand new album. Shirley will be singing. It's a great album. Thanks, folks, for your time.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for all your support.
You're welcome. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.